Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, that music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the weekly show that, for some strange reason, didn't happen last week, but it's here again. It's time for the Two Guys Soccer Show. I'm Mike, I'm one guy, he is Stead, he is the other guy.
Hello.
Oh, you are there. I didn't know whether I had another guy or not.
I made it with about, 3 seconds to spare. I think that's an accurate description. About 3 seconds.
You see, you're doing almost as good as I was. Because I literally got on in the five second countdown came on, so we were cutting it close tonight. But that's all right. That's okay. That's how we do business. So we are the Two Guys, and we are brought to you once again by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment, and the only bar in Bethesda where it every day is St. Patrick's Day. I ain't going to lie, I'm still recovering from Sunday. It was a lot of fun. The only thing that I can say is I think I left with all my own clothes this time.
Hey.
And if you know anything about my history in St. Patrick's Day, leaving with my clothes and only my clothes is a very good step in the right direction. But I digress. We did not come to talk about my St. Patrick's Day exploits. And since the litigation is still pending in Florida due to that traffic stop that involved Ford Pinto, a ferret, and an attempt to drive to cross the bridge to Puerto Rico, can't talk about that. But let's get back to what we really came to talk about, which is football. It's been 2 weeks. We had some unfortunate illnesses last week that prevented us from joining you. But we enter into this international break. Instead, try it with me. Inhale. Exhale. Finally, an opportunity to collect our breath after what has been a pretty intense month of March.
Absolutely. Absolutely. FA Cup had an interesting weekend, too. And so there's been quite a bit of fun. I did see a couple of things that I'm probably going to touch on that for my good when we get to it. But
why delay the inevitable? Go for it.
Okay. I'm actually going to repeat a good. I saw something on Twitter recently that made me really like it was a stat that I was unaware of. So, because my good this week is going to be Wolves in the Premier League. They are quite the thorn in the side for a lot of the Big Six teams, and I believe that they – I'm trying to see if I can find it, but they have a pretty good record against the Big Six.
Yes.
And it was – and looking at – and then seeing how they're still alive in the – I believe they're
– they're in the semis.
Yeah, they're in the semis in the FA Cup, and they are really just kind of rolling through teams in the Premier League. And they are now, you're looking at them now going, they're the mid-table team to beat. They really are. And, you know, there's still quite a gap between 7th and 6th, of course. There's still 13 points. But
you have to
really think if they're able to keep together what they have been doing and keep the team together and keep the coaching, keep some semblance of the coaching there.
Mm-hmm.
This team could be smelling around for sixth next year if they're able to keep the ship. If they're able to keep the ship right, they could be smelling around a sixth place finish next year. Which for a team that's a newly promoted team, it shows you what good ownership can do. It shows you what money can do. But
mm-hmm.
you got to feel pretty good about it. You got to feel pretty good about it.
Well, I mean, even sitting around in seventh, there is a outside shot. A better than likely shot of them picking up a Europa League place, right?
Mm-hmm.
That has always been the big test. We've seen it happen before with teams that get newly promoted and
mm-hmm.
then end up in the Europa League. And that mm-hmm. those group stages and that qualifying just knocks them down. Because
it knocks them out, yeah.
Yeah, they don't have the squad down. Unlike many newly promoted teams, I don't get the feeling that finances are going to be an issue at Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some wealthy Asian ownership who has set their sights on being a top six
mm-hmm.
Club. You know, lots of renovations to the Molyneux.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw any of that game, they put on quite a show.
Yep, absolutely.
At halftime. So they remind me almost of the Premier League version of the Vegas Knights
mm-hmm.
with beats and the fireworks and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I did notice is they play in extremely unusual formation with that 3-5-2, which
mm-hmm.
is very effective because what they were able to do against Manchester United was, in effect, cut the service in the midfield by clogging it up with five players.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw United be able to kind of stretch them, get
mm-hmm.
them disorganized, and then extend those lines of service downfield to Martial and Rashford, who were stepping up front,
mm-hmm.
who were starting up. And that proved to be their undoing. I think Diogo Jota and Ruben Neves, I've said before, I think might be the best Premier League player not on one of the top six.
Agreed. Agreed.
And I think he's been a great force in the midfield, kind of playing that, you want to say a number 10, but he doesn't line up in an attacking sense.
Mm-hmm.
He stays a little bit further back, but he definitely advances more. He's kind of almost in that Paul Pogba role. Where
right.
he's an attacking box-to-box midfielder, which is an unusual
mm-hmm.
position to put a player in.
Mm-hmm.
But he has both defensive and offensive responsibilities. But I think you're going to see offers, especially for him. He's a relatively young guy. He's 24. Coming in. And Jota might move on. He's become a proven Premier League striker.
Mm-hmm.
They've got defenders. That's a team that can play, you know, like you said, 13-point gap in between them and Chelsea.
Right.
So, not going for six this year. But
right.
given what's going on, the announcement of the potential transfer ban for Chelsea and the reaffirmation
right.
that appeal was denied,
mm-hmm.
I think that could really damage Chelsea's position next year.
Mm-hmm.
And strengthen Wolves' position if to pick up people over the summer. But if they do get into Europe, you're really going to see Uncle Nuno be tested because
yeah.
those Thursday games take a lot out of you. I'm sorry.
They do. The Thursday-Sunday shift is definitely not an easy thing to continue to turn around to do. If they're lucky, they can maybe steal a couple of games on Monday. But they are showing that they can play in two tournaments, even though the cups aren't quite the – they're not as strenuous as far as the because you're taking weeks off from your Premier League schedule to play in your domestic cup games. But they have a lot of players out on loan. So
mm-hmm.
they have a big squad. So they can choose to, if they happen to do maybe get a Europe spot, to bring some players in and maybe try to get them some more playing time in some of the lower cup games, like just the League Cup or even the FA Cup games. But one other thing they got to pay attention to, though, is they have Raul Jimenez, who's on loan, but he's sitting on 12 Premier League goals and 15 goals on the season. That is a really, really strong tally for a mid-table club. And he is on loan from Benfica, but they have the funds, and I'm not quite sure what the loan terms are, but that's definitely a case where he's getting Premier League exposure now, and he is a Mexican player. So there are going to be plenty of opportunities for him. So I'm thinking that it would be wise if they could lock him up and at least try to get him to sign for a couple of years and not you know, maybe kind of play this loan deal with Benfica into turning it into something of signing as a. You don't want him to go to a big six club or a big club in another country and be a bench player who comes in and tries to kind of like win his place. I just don't think that's a good move. And I think it's wise because he is getting a lot of exposure in the Premier League to hopefully stay and play with Wolves. Cause you know, they got, it's fun. They're a fun team to watch. You got to say, you know, they're definitely one of the most exciting games of the weekend. And I'm very frustrated that in order for me to catch the game, I got to pay $3.99 to NBC Sports. Because they never seem to get on CNBC or NBC Sports Network to watch them, but it's definitely a great, great, great story. And you know, it's not quite a Leicester story, but that's going to be, as of course, that's as we know, a 1 in 5,000 chance to happen. So, but this is exciting, and I really wish this team all the best moving forward.
The other problem with them is not only do they have a lot of players out on loan, they have a lot of players in on loan.
Yeah,
you know, Jota, loan player from Madrid. He was a permanent transfer. Castro, their left back, loan player.
Jota's actually signed. He signed. He was loaned before,
signed.
But he signed. Yeah, he signed. He's in.
Okay, but they were bringing in a lot of players on loan over the last couple
yeah.
of years. And if you, it, and that was a question at least last year, was how many players they had on loan getting promotion, and then how were those loan players going to stick around, and what's their permanent transfer policy going to be now that they've established themselves as a mid-table, upper mid-table team, they're going to have to go in and reinforce, and that's going to cost some money.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's going to cost some money, absolutely. And all these Portuguese players on this squad are going to want some money too. Yeah, so they're definitely going to have because those players are the big clubs in Portugal are going to be like, hey, we'll pay you more if you come back home, and you can be playing for one of the big three of Sporting or Lisboa. So.
One of the other issues when you deal with the with Portuguese league, especially with some of their players, is the issue of third-party ownership. Whether or not how you negotiate those transfers, because a lot of times you're not just not negotiating with the team that's loaning them in, but the partial owners.
Mm-hmm.
So this could present even another sort of odd wrinkle in the transfer saga that will ultimately become Wolves' offseason. I expect that they're going to strengthen. I would say off the strength of a sixth-place finish, you don't necessarily leave your club unless there is a bigger job available, of which I don't necessarily – well, Chelsea's an obvious answer to the potential for big jobs being available, but I don't know if that's a move that anybody would want to make. To further their coaching career at this point in time, because that's not exactly stable. But, you know, whether or not, say, Poch does leave, you know, a proven manager like Uncle Nuno decides that, hey, I can do this. Because he's certainly going to get looks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they're sitting on, let me see, 3, 6, 9, 12, 13, 14, 15. They're sitting on 16 points against the Big Six this season.
That's not a bad return.
That's a great return on investment. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great return. You know, you'd be lucky as a newly promoted side to want to take 6. 16 is a pretty hefty return.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I'm looking at you're looking at a fellow, an Arsenal squad. Would love to get 16 points against Big Six. You know what I mean? They would love that.
I think
that,
the Big
so.
Six would love to get 16 points against the Big
Six.
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. But I it just makes me smile because you know they're walking out there going, dude, I don't want to play them. Do you want to play them? No, I don't want to play them. You play them. So that's also, I'm sorry, I misread the stat. That's points and games in cups. Points.
Yeah, but still.
But still. I mean, if you want to, you're just looking at that, that's wins and draws. Out of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's 12 games, and you have
16
games, you have 4 wins, and you have 4 ties. So you're 4-4 and 11 games. You're 4-4 and 3 against the Big Six. That's a great run.
That's a great run for any newly promoted guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, like I said, most Big Six teams out of 8 games against the Big Six would take 4-4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that keeps you there or thereabouts. So that's a great return on investment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So since we went with your good, we skipped the question of the day. Did you catch the news from another sport? Baseball.
Yeah, I did.
Mike Trout got $430 million over 12 years, which works out to roughly $35.8 million per season annual contract value.
Correct. Yes,
so
I
need
that.
To go and see who was in his neighborhood. And there was a surprising result. He is actually making about $800,000 more per season than one Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh.
Who took a bit of a pay cut to go to Juventus.
Yeah.
Who would you rather have, Mike Trout or Cristiano Ronaldo?
Not a question in my mind, Mike Trout. For one reason and one reason only. Cristiano Ronaldo is 33. Mike Trout is 27. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo may be 34 by now, but I know he's Cristiano Ronaldo is not going to be at that level for too much longer. I think the best he can hope for is have a late career, emergence, because he's never really fallen off, but I would say late career sustainability, such as Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who was 36 and he was still leading his teams in goals. I think that's what we're going to see with Cristiano Ronaldo. Mike Trout, though, being 27, you're looking at he's still going to be as dominant as ever. And there's a little bit of, I guess, a little bit of poetic justice in a way, being a Nats fan and seeing the whole Bryce Harper saga play out. Whereas Bryce Harper took an extra 3 years on his contract, and so he could get the record deal. He wanted to really, for some reason, at least from the reports are saying, he wanted to have that record contract of $330 million. So he had the record for all of 18 days. And his contract also does not have he doesn't have as much control as he would have had he taken a $300 million contract for 10 years. And had ability to have opt-out clauses, which he does not really have. So I just find it kind of funny that the final number is what they really, really are going for. And not saying that I'm going to blame Bryce Harper for anything. I mean, go get your money. But $430 million not only sets the record for the richest contract, it obliterates the record for richest contract.
You know what? Yes, it is by total guaranteed money, but it is not in terms of annual contract value because
contract. No,
and
no.
LeBron James still has that.
No, in fact, John Wall is going to make $47 million next year. So, yeah, that's
you know
total
where
contract.
That puts him in. That puts him in the realm of like Lionel Messi.
Yeah,
and that's a dumb question. Who would you rather have, Messi? Or John Wall.
Or John Wall. An out of shape, often injured John Wall.
But that was also sort of my backdoor into the good that was Cristiano Ronaldo with another vintage performance last week in the Champions
Wonderful
League.
Performance.
Taking
Wonderful
it on himself with the hat trick to overturn a 2-0 deficit at Atletico Madrid. And in the process of doing my research, because this conversation always comes up when Ronaldo does Ronaldo things, who's better, Messi or Ronaldo? And I have officially decided to just push on that argument.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't even know at this point what you're arguing. If you want to go by goals per game, Messi's got it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at sort of vintage performances, I would have to give the edge to Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like whenever the lights are extremely bright, it always ends up with Cristiano Ronaldo putting the ball in the back of the net when he needs it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I've been racking my brain for the longest is, tell me that vintage Messi tournaments when he just picked the team up and carried.
Yeah, you know, you seem to get more Messi moments than Ronaldo, where he just has a moment of brilliance in a game where it just he just leaves your jaw on the floor and go, you know, what did I just see? But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Ronaldo definitely has more of the game, and I'm thinking of even some of those some of the games from the last Euro where Portugal won, where he really just put the team on his back, and you know he's tracking back, winning balls in the defensive third of the opposing team's attack. He's you know commanding you see him coaching from the top and how he's calling for players where they should make their runs. He's talking for passing lanes. He's getting fired up and he's yelling at his teammates, but you don't see him belittling his teammates. You know he's really just trying to keep their heads in the game and stuff. Where you don't see that type of leadership displayed for the lay fan. You know, somebody who doesn't really, really know the inner workings of the game isn't going to see Messi in that type of – he's not going to be that type of demonstrative character that's going to really get everyone to rally around him in that way for someone who doesn't really know like Messi's game. So, but I have a fundamental – beef with the whole greatest of all time thing, or who's better, Messi or Ronaldo? Because I feel like it's an argument that what do you really, really do? I think the only game I can think of that's more of a team game than world football is probably American football. But I really just want to see how one of these guys plays with really a poor supporting cast. And I feel like that's what changes the narrative. Now, you're looking at international play. Who's had a better supporting cast in international play, Messi or Ronaldo?
It's tough to say, and I would say that certainly when I look at the list of names on the Argentinian team, they jump out to me more than the list of names on the Portuguese side, right?
Right.
You know, I'm looking at Aguero, Mascherano, you know, he played a couple of matches. He still,
you know,
was
Di Maria was out there. He played with Javier
Maria,
for a little bit, you know.
Lavezzi, those guys have all been on the Argentinian side while he's been there, been keeping Messi. You know, I would say early in his career, Ronaldo had the likes of Quaresma, Deco, and thinking he in 06 he still had Figo, right?
Yeah, I believe he definitely still had Luis. He had a Twilight Luis Figo, but a Twilight Luis Figo was still a tremendous player.
You know, he went to the Euro finals with Pepe and Carvalho and
that was when they lost to Greece, correct?
No, I'm talking about the one
the most
that
recent
they
one.
Won.
Okay.
All right. You know, and I've seen it, and I just have those memories of games. You know, certainly the ones where the lights are brightest, all eyes are on the back of you. And I just keep going back to the moment this past year when we were watching the World Cup and that game between Portugal and Spain, and it comes down to that late free kick, and we're all sitting in the back room watching it on the big screen, and to a man, each and every one of us said he's going to put this in the back of the net.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's so crazy. We knew it. And nobody was even surprised when it happened.
And said he's going to put it in the back of the net. And for the whole entire time he lined that up, he's going to put it in the back of the net. Was there any doubt that he was going to put it in the back of the net?
No.
No, a bit. No. And he proceeded to do so. And then, you know, you can go to this game even on Tuesday where it was like, look, I don't know what Ronaldo's going to do, but I know he's not going out quiet. And he didn't. So I give him full credit because I've seen more of those types of performances. I am with you on it being a team game and thus being hard to judge who's the best player. Because for sure, a player like Zinedine Zidane is, as a midfielder, is never going to have the return of goals that Cristiano Ronaldo has.
No.
But you've got to look at his performance in the World Cup in 06.
Yeah.
When he just pulled that French team to the finals
to the
by the scruff of their neck.
Right, but the dominance he showed in 98, too, in that final against Brazil. I mean, that was unbelievable the way he dominated that game. I mean, he had Brazil just sitting back going, what are you going to do next? Because we really have nothing for you.
But he's never going to be a guy that's going to dominate in terms of goals. He's not a 50-goal game. But how do you take him out of the conversation as one of the best players ever after what we saw him do?
Right.
You know, it's also a doggone shame that you're never going to really hear about a goalkeeper potentially being one of the best ever.
No.
You know, I look at, you know, you can go down the list of great goalkeepers. Peter Schmeichel comes to mind immediately. And
I'm thinking of Oliver Kahn. Oliver Kahn was just a monster.
Was a beast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was, I would say, for as far as players go, there was a while, even during the height of the Messi-Ronaldo stuff, where, hey, you really had to look closely at Manuel Neuer to decide whether he didn't belong in that conversation as well as he was playing.
And as an opposing, you did not want a fast break against Gianluigi Buffon. You didn't. I mean, the guy knows when you're going to make that touch and when to attack and get that hand on the ball. So, yeah, you're exactly right. And why aren't those players really brought into play? But also, think about it, too. Why isn't a Carlos Puyol in that discussion? I mean, can you think of a better or more dominant central defender than Carlos Puyol?
It's hard.
Also, don't forget, who scored the game-winning goal when they won the World Cup? Puyol scored that goal.
Yeah. Even give him his due, as bad as he is, and by bad I mean dirty, annoying, everything. Sergio Ramos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's been Gerard Piqué.
Yeah.
Those guys have been rocks.
Yeah, and they have 10, I believe they have over 10, if not 20 titles each.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely.
And then how could we not say give credit to the midfield? I think that they suffer from the fact that they play so long with each other, but Xavi and Iniesta.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, again, two guys who aren't going to score a lot of goals,
right,
but they were what made Barcelona and Spain tick for the better part of 6 years.
Right.
And perhaps were part of both the most dominant international and most dominant club sides in world history. But yet, because they're not going to have necessarily the goal return, or even when you think of like the flashy sports center moment, because you know, you're looking at Messi's goal, not Xavi's pass, which set it up.
Right. But this takes us back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast too. When we first started doing this show, is the Claude Makélélé and N'Golo Kanté type player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that guy's never going to get the looks that in I mean, any player should be, or anybody like us fans of the game who really like to really watch all aspects of the game. Seeing N'Golo Kanté place in the top 10 in a player of the year, that's basically almost the equivalent of him winning. Because those type of players just don't – they're not going to get the flashy goals. They're not going to make the amazing run down the sideline to set up a beautiful cross. No. But what they're going to do is they're going to keep the other team from ever being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. But you want to know where he is going to get credit and not being N'Golo Kanté? Because this is going to bring me on to, I don't know whether it's good, bad, ugly, or just something that I want to make sure I talk about. And before I get on to that, I want to, again, shout out to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda's premier venue for sports and live music on the weekends. They put on a great St. Patty's Day. I'm pretty sure everybody's still recovering from that down there. But it's going to be a packed house again this weekend for the NCAA tournament and some of the upcoming Euro qualifying fixtures. So make your way down there, 4844 Cordell Avenue. Catch some of those NCAA tournament games on the big screen in the back. Trust me, it'll be worth it. But last week was an interesting week because I thought when we were going to do the show on Monday, I did all my pre-show stuff, you know, Sunday night, getting ready for Monday morning, and I had everything ready, and then the world just collapsed in on me on Monday when, of all things, well, I knew that Real Madrid was going to get rid of Santi Solari.
Right.
I did not expect them to bring back Zinedine Zidane.
No. No.
And then what's great about Zidane's return is immediately the transfer rumor mill starts up. And you and I have talked about the anatomy of good transfer rumor. It's like more of a math algorithm. It's almost like algebra. Insert player X, multiply by assign team Y, who may or may not have money, and iterate in generate interest. So, of course, Zinedine Zidane takes over, and you have the rumor mill start up. All of a sudden,
big time.
Within days, they were linked to Neymar, Kylian Mbappe, Paul Pogba, Eden Hazard, and N'Golo Kante. Now, while you talk about him not being one of the top 10 players of the year, you know where he does rank in the top 10, top 15? Transfer value.
Damn right.
So
they
may not give him a Ballon d'Or, but they know how expensive he is.
Exactly. They'll give him a contract, though. He'll get a contract. He'll get a damn good contract.
Now, of course, as I was doing this and I was getting ready to go on my rant about that, we know that he was promised an bad, ugly, the whole situation that Madrid has gotten themselves into over the course of, you know, I want to say the last decade of Florentino Perez, right? They spent all those years chasing La Decima, then it became Undecima, then it became 12, now it's 13, right? But in that time, they have not been nearly as successful in the league. I think they've only gotten two league titles, right?
Yeah.
And we talk about, you know, the Galacticos project and stuff like that. And, yeah, they bought in some big-name players. We can look at the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and Karim Benzema and Kaká in 2009. But after that, it's just been, you know, they spent a lot of money here and there, but it's questionable about the success of the players that they really brought in. And now you've got this team that's just oddly constructed and is in need of a refit. I think Zidane noticed that. But do they really have the finances? And are they playing in the same sort of financial world that they think they are? There's no way they could get those players. The fuck? If you did what the supposed transfer fees would be, you're talking about like $1.3 billion for those.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean,
and that's just presupposing that PSG would sell Neymar and Mbappe, that Chelsea would sell both N'Golo Kante and
Eden Hazard
to you.
Right. And you'll give one of them, Gareth Bale.
Yeah. Right. I don't, and it's not like Real Madrid has ever had a history of getting players from big teams, right?
Right.
Ronaldo wanted to go. And the rest of them were, and Ronaldo wanted to leave.
Right.
Gareth Bale was at Tottenham who couldn't support
They couldn't pay him.
they couldn't pay him, and they couldn't turn down 100 million euros at that time. You know, Karim Benzema was at Lyon.
And Karim Benzema has been there for a long time. I mean, James Rodriguez, before, even though he left, he wasn't – they poached him from the – kind of from after watching him in that World Cup with Colombia. So he
but
wasn't –
they poached him from Monaco.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Who had to sell him to balance the books.
To balance the books,
so,
right.
Yeah, they there was that tax issue with them, and they were going to have to pay a bunch of taxes and these transfer fees that they hadn't paid,
mm-hmm.
so they had to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Luka Modric came from Tottenham.
Right.
Toni Kroos was at Bayern Munich, but they were ready to move on from
him. They're ready to move on from him, yeah.
Kaká did not want to leave Milan, but Berlusconi needed the money and told him he had to go.
Right.
So it's not like they've been poaching these big players from big teams who have the financial clout and the desire to keep these players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how the Madridistas are going to feel when you promise them Neymar, Mbappe, Pogba, and Kante, and you come back with, like, Eden Hazard and Milinkovic-Savic.
Right.
And people like that. Is that going to be a tough sell? Like, because Paris has got to be feeling the heat now. For the first time, I've heard Ramon Calderon, the former president, start to make noise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he might be eyeing a potential comeback.
Right. You know,
and remember, that's an elected position.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, the president of Real Madrid is an elected position,
mm.
so they could hold. He could be out at some point in time.
Right. I think Real Madrid too has to be careful with. They only got two league titles out of Cristiano Ronaldo. Just two.
Yeah, but they got four Champions Leagues.
Now, granted,
they got
four Champions Leagues. That's fine, and you know, but the Champions League, it's again, you know, it could be your night, and you get through. You know what I mean? So, because you're looking at what happened with Ajax and how, you know, they kind of got worked at home, and I'm pretty sure they were expecting a bit more at least in the La Liga aspect of it from the moves they made and from the just from the Ronaldo money that they spent, but also Ronaldo was scoring a goal a game in La Liga. So
it wasn't like they spent the Ronaldo money.
They didn't spend Ronaldo money, but you know, I feel like if you got a player who's scoring a goal a game, you might want to expect a bit more from. I mean, a couple of more, not even just one more league title, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to just getting two, and of course. We're splitting hairs here because, I mean,
well,
it's
how do you measure success?
Yeah,
you know, how do you measure success? We consider Sir Alex Ferguson one of the most successful managers in Manchester United, one of the most successful teams.
Yeah, but he had two Champions Leagues, right? Two or three.
He only won two Champions Leagues, but
you think
about all the Premier Leagues that he won.
Right, he had 13. So
yes,
yeah,
in that time, so.
Yeah.
It depends on how you judge success. For Real Madrid, it has always been European Cups.
Yeah, but also, though, no team outside of Real Madrid, Barcelona, or Atletico has won that league since 2003-04. So,
yes.
You know, I don't know. Maybe Madrid should have won a couple more? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's a case of you've got a team in Barcelona that's built to win those games and a team at Real Madrid that has been built to win in Europe.
Focus on Europe. Well, at least I know one thing. They're keeping that winning in Spain. So they at least are keeping it in the country because you see the Champions League is boy, she's cruel. I hope you don't mind. I kind of want to segue here because I can't not talk about PSG getting ousted by Manchester United.
I mean, go for it, because that was kind of like the highlight for them for the last 2 weeks, because they promptly followed up that comeback with two losses.
True, but you lost. Okay, the Arsenal loss
was a bit unlucky.
Yeah, it was unlucky. I felt like that was more, you know, and also Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to lose something. You know what I mean?
He
has to get
this
perfect. Yeah, he can't be perfect. This had to happen. And, you know, and also you were playing against a very, very, very desperate Arsenal team. So who got a lot of calls to go their way, got a lot of friendly bounces. You know, I'm not going to say they looked good, but, you know, it was basically kind of like the stars sort of aligned for Arsenal that day. And but
it's
also
that old adage that the score line flattered them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But still, PSG, I feel really bad for Gianluigi Buffon because the only trophy he's yet to win is a Champions League. So I'm just a big fan of his as well. I'm not gonna hide that. But his defense did not set him up very well. I mean, he was basically
Set him up very well.
No, he didn't. And he almost got a hand on that penalty kick at the very end of the game. He almost got a hand on it. So of course, almost
got a hand on it,
but he didn't.
I think part of the thing is he has not been starting in the French league for them.
Right.
You know, and I don't think that you bring I understand the wanting to rotate keepers out for games, for cup games. You see
you don't do that for Champions League games.
Champions League
not
games.
For Champions League games. This isn't the
once, and even that wasn't successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very early on in David De Gea's tenure when Andreas Lindegaard was playing in goal in the league and he was playing in goal in Europe in the cup games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was like his first season, right?
Mm-hmm.
That ended very quickly.
Right.
But you see, PSG brought him in to play Champions League for them. He thought he would be a Champions League keeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he had gotten enough reps. And we've talked about this. How does playing in Ligue 1, where you really are so far ahead at everybody else, set you up for success in the Premier League or in Europe? And I don't think it does.
I don't know.
I also think you've also got to look at the return on investment that you've made for that £222 million that you spent, or that £200 million that you spent on Neymar.
On Neymar.
You've gotten two halves of a season, and he has never played the knockout game for PSG.
No, he's hurt all the time.
Yes. He's never played, in 2 years, he's never played the knockout game for PSG. You know, and I can say, you know, I thought Kylian Mbappe was a little bit off, but he's 20 years old. He's going to have off the
He's 20, yeah.
You know, there should have been somebody else. I'm looking at you, Angel Di Maria,
mm-hmm.
to come in and pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
I expected more from their defense. Where was their defense? Why was that team set up the way it was? And, you know, you're playing Thiago in central midfield, who's a center back, because you refuse to play Adrian Rabiot because he refuses to sign a contract for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just pure use of resources.
It is, especially when, I'm sorry, FPP is going to catch up to PSG at some point. It's going to happen. They're going to have to start selling. I'm not saying they're going to get penalized, but they're going to have to start selling some of these players.
Well, they had their case against the reopening of the earlier ones overturned, so they're free and clear on that. But what they're not free and clear on is the 17-18, and that is the Neymar, Kylian Mbappe window.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. They're going to have to start shedding salary. They're going to have to start selling players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even the Rabiot thing, he's going to leave on a free, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't even count that as a player sale.
No.
That's
not
balancing books.
That's not balancing anything. No, this is a balance of things.
And, you know, theoretically, I could see them wanting to offload Neymar and focus on Mbappe. I think if there was one of them I would get rid of, it would be Neymar.
Right.
But, you know, you're going to want 300, 250, 300 million for him. Who's going to pay that?
No one. No one. Especially now. Especially now. Because look at what keeps getting injured on him. His feet. His ankle. You know, I'm sorry. I think that's the most important part of your body when it comes to being a footballer is having your feet and ankles working properly. So there's no way they're going to get a return on that. No way. No one's going to spend that money for Neymar. And in fact, you know, just when we when I do show prep and I'm looking at what's the hot articles and what's going on and who's transferring, you don't see Neymar's name. All you see Neymar's name pop up in is whatever beef he has with the Brazilian Soccer Federation and whether or not his surgery was successful or whatever his father said. So,
well, I mean, he went to Real Madrid. I gotta believe the last player to go from Barcelona to Real Madrid, or the other way around, was Figo, right?
Figo.
Yeah, and
right.
He got a pig's head thrown at him in his first
Absolutely.
Game back. So
Absolutely.
I'm not doing that. So,
but
you know,
I think Neymar's, but Neymar's got to get out of Paris. I think he does. He's got to get out of Paris. I think he's making a huge mistake.
They want $350 million for him. That's
yeah.
Paying that.
It's not much paying that. Yeah, I know.
They already, Eden Hazard, and they launched a $100 million bid for him, which I think he goes because he's only got 12 that. And
yeah, but Chelsea said no to the recent, they offered $115 million. Chelsea said no. No, I'm sorry. They offered $100 million. Chelsea said no, we want $115.
Over $15 million, that gets done.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think it gets
They're
done.
They're not going to sell him before the end of the season.
No,
and,
but I think that gets done.
It's done. Chelsea's world alert right now. I think it works out to be X million dollars plus Gareth Bale.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and they're trying to negotiate how much for Gareth. Chelsea, with this 2-year transfer ban, can't afford to just willingly get rid of Eden Hazard, but they do
mm-hmm.
need to rebuild. My question on that one is, do you really want to rebuild with a 30-year-old Gareth Bale? Like that?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I know, like, he was offered to Manchester United, and they were like, "Thanks, no thanks." Not at that
yeah.
point.
But a 30-year-old Gareth Bale who appears to have an attitude problem,
or not want to. I don't know if he has an English attitude problem or it's an attitude problem in Spain, right?
Yeah. I don't know. No. I threw that in there because I was like, I feel like taking a dig at Gareth Bale because he's played Spurs. So that's just me having a little fun.
Well, if you want to go there, my ugly was going to be Spurs March. Spurs has, you know, how many points in the league Spurs has picked up since Valentine's Day?
I think just one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the draw of Arsenal, which they barely got. They barely got it. I mean, they were a cocky, boneheaded penalty kick away from losing and Arsenal getting 3 points from Aubameyang. That's where they were. And they
Since
were given
they won 3-0 against Dortmund on February 13th, they have dropped 10 out of 12 points in the Premier League since then.
Well, look at this, too. The funny thing is, Spurs do have a considerable number of wins with 20, but they only have one draw. They're sitting on 9 losses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I can't recall a team in third place at this point in the season with 9 losses. That's a little staggering. And
well,
draws are big points, man. Those draws add up in the end. You get a point here, you get a point here, you get a point here. That changes the landscape of a lot of things. You know, they're now a bunch of bad draws away from, you know, they could have gotten some dirty points here and there. But now they're sitting there. They're way off of second place. And they have now 4 teams breathing down their neck.
Well, and the problem with them is if you could see any team, given where Europe is going to take them,
mm-hmm.
having to play Man City,
mm-hmm.
and then with a look potentially, if they were to get through, at
mm-hmm.
Juventus,
mm-hmm.
you can see them continuing to fall through that trap door.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And as I was going through it, I was like, you know, Tottenham better get something together because I think, you know, I think Arsenal's best shot is through the league.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I know you're an Arsenal fan, I think the European draw with them picking up Napoli was not kind.
No, it wasn't. And like we said before, if Arsenal thinks they can pull that BS again that they did against, and basically in their last two, draw to
lose one leg.
Lose one and then scrape it out later. You're exactly right. That is not happening against the rugged Napoli team. That is not happening. So they better you're right. That's a bad draw. Bad draw. Especially when you see some of the other larger teams getting much easier placements for their quarterfinal draw. Doesn't look good for Arsenal at all. No, you're right. I agree with you.
You know, certainly Chelsea, Slavia Prague, and then Benfica or Eintracht Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. If Arsenal somehow gets past Napoli, they've got Villarreal and Valencia looking at. Again,
right.
Two teams who may not be pulling up stumps consistently in Spain, but also two teams that are not going to capitulate.
No.
In Europe, the same way, right?
Right. You're looking at two teams that are going, we're playing against Atletico Barcelona and Real Madrid. Sorry, Arsenal, you're not intimidating anybody.
Mm-mm. And so if they have a game where it gets away and they lose the first leg, then they can't, then, you see, my thing was, I felt like if they lost the first leg, Unai Emery's going to pull everybody for the Sunday game, mm-hmm. and they're going to lose that too.
Yeah.
If he gets a win in the first leg, he's gonna play everybody and then try and get away with the with less of a squad in the second leg, and he's gonna get mm-hmm. done.
Yeah.
I just mm-hmm. see this go. I see the. I'm not saying that it will, but I see the potential for it to go very, very poorly.
I agree.
Whereas I think the best hope for Chelsea now is to go through the Europa League.
Go through Europa League. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, take your foot, just do what Jose Mourinho did. Let Sarri do what Jose, especially after this week's 2-0 loss to Everton, which was their game in hand.
Yep.
You know, I would just say, all right, we've got what looks to be an easier road through the Europa League than we do through the league. Remember,
mm-hmm.
they've still got
West Ham, Liverpool, United,
yeah.
and Leicester.
They're coming back from the with Liverpool.
Yeah, they're playing on the road for Liverpool, United, and Leicester. They're on the road. So, yeah you're exactly right. Their end of season versus Arsenal's end of season run, where Arsenal's looking at Crystal Palace at home, and then they also have Brighton at home, but their road games are Burnley. So, but then, of course, you know, they still have Wolves and Leicester. Those are going to be tough games. And, you know, I just finished talking about Wolves. But they don't have any big six teams. And you can see Wolves. Let's say Wolves are still alive in the FA Cup by this time.
Mm-hmm.
Wolves may go, whoa, we're 13 points out. We need to worry about this. Let's go ahead and, you know, field the team. Let's focus on seeing if we can win a trophy this year. So Chelsea has a much more challenging route to try to go through in the league, and they really should focus on going through Europe. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. I wasn't thinking about it like that, but it makes complete sense to me.
If I had to handicap it right now, I would say either Liverpool or Man City, and I would give the edge to Man City or Liverpool just because I think all the talk about the quadruple.
Mm-hmm.
You go for everything and you end up with nothing.
Right.
I would say Liverpool, Man City, Arsenal, United, Tottenham, and Chelsea in that order.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I can see potential for Tottenham to fall through the trap door.
Right.
And I think Chelsea Sarri just really needs to focus on winning a trophy to keep
right.
his job.
To keep his job, right. I would love to see Arsenal win just some European glory, because they really just haven't fared well since they finaled back in 05, or no, I'm sorry, in 06 in Champions League. So, but that being said, I would hate for a team to put all their eggs in one basket and have it end up with nothing, of course. And I really think Man City, I think because they do have Premier League titles, recent Premier League titles, I can totally see Pep and the ownership group really saying, we want a Champions League. We want a Champions League. We want a Champions League. Because that's the trophy they don't have.
That's a trophy they don't have, and outside of Barcelona, that's a trophy he doesn't have.
Right.
He
it didn't happen at Bayern
Munich. Want it. They need to get it in before this transfer ban hits them, which is going to probably be announced in the next month or two. Not that I think it will hit them the same way that it hits Chelsea because of just the sheer number of players that they have out on loan and stuff like that. I think they can withstand it more so than Chelsea can.
Yeah.
But they want to get it in now. And this is their time to get it now. The interesting thing is you need in order for them to do it, at some point, they're going to have to go through Juventus and Barca. That's where I think it gets tough for them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And doing that as well as trying to win the FA Cup and trying to win the Premier League, it's if they were able to pull that off, I feel like that would be the one of the greatest feats of any team probably in history. So
I mean, if they were able to pull it off, I would give them credit for having the greatest season in Premier League history. I don't know if I'm going to yet call them the greatest team, but given the fact that it's a title race, what they have had to go through pretty much to win all these tournaments from start to finish, I would say it would be the greatest season. It would surpass United's treble-winning season. Simply because you got to remember, when United won the treble, they actually went out of the EFL Cup relatively early. So, I mean, it was an accomplishment because it was the first. No English team had ever done that. They are the ones who have come the closest realistically since then. But it was, and it's a different era. You know, it's not back in the top three, top four era. You now have to play. You've got a big six. That means
you got a big
there are
six,
guaranteed 10 games that you have to take really, really seriously. Plus, you've got Wolves.
Yeah, you got Watford. You got West Ham. You basically have after outside the big six, you got another four, at least that are going to be relatively formidable. I mean, it's never easy to go to Bournemouth. Everton's always going to be floating around somewhere, and Leicester's become kind of like the darlings of the mid table in the Premier League. So yeah, it's. Just getting through the big six is definitely not going to be enough.
Yeah, so I still think it's a bridge too far, but, you know, predictions are made to be broken. And if we get 50% of the things that we say right on this show, if we get 50% of the things that we say on this show right, then we're doing really well.
If that's the case, I'm going to start playing the numbers.
So as we get ready to head out, again, the fastest hour in soccer sports. We want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, for keeping us on the air. A big shout out to producer Paul, who is recovering from some mutant flu virus that we need to give a new name because it was so serious. But we hope he's feeling better and he's got us on the air again. Thanks to you, my friend. A late entry, cutting it close to the wire, but getting in and having a good conversation. Anything you're looking forward to over this international break?
We got our boys coming up on March 21st. Let's see how this crop of call-ups do under new coach Greg Berhalter. So, definitely looking forward to looking at this. I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot next week.
Yeah, I got two new international jerseys I got to break in over this break.
Cool. I got to get a new one, too,
I got an Albania that we added to the collection. Don't ask
Albania.
Why.
Albania? That's the best.
Everybody needs a Lauri Kana jersey.
That's true. Yeah, okay. I might as well go get a Mkhitaryan jersey from Armenia.
Everybody needs a Lauri Kana jersey. I don't know why, but I have one. And so, once again, to you, my friend, for doing this. Thanks to producer Paul. Thanks to the folks at Harp and Fiddles. Thanks to you, our listener. Producer Paul said our listenership increased 300% last week. I found out that my mom and dad, or 2 weeks ago, I found out that my mom and dad accidentally downloaded the show. They said they did that by mistake and it won't be done again. So we expect to be back down to normal listenership again this week. So thank you very much, our dedicated listener who remains nameless. I don't even know who that is. Just somebody who keeps doing this by mistake. They're looking for something else. Anyway, it's been great. We had fun this week. We did good this week. We'll do better next week.
Nice show. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
You off, Mike? Okay, nice show. Thank you for... pardon me. I didn't hit the mute button fast enough. Huh?
I said you good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was unbelievable. You could have thrown dirt on me last week, and it would have been appropriate. Oh, I was...
No, you're
it
fine.
It was just a head... The thing is, it's just a head cold. No fever,
yeah,
no chills.
Sometimes those are worse than the flu. Sometimes those are worse than the flu.
Oh, man. It just kept moving around between the chest, the nose, and the throat. So it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm between week 2 and 3, and I'm still not out of it. It's rotating
again.
So, listen, no tale of woe here. It's just my turn in the barrel. But great show. And you guys really did some nice catching up this week, I'll tell you. Sorry that we missed last week, but there was just no way on earth I could have gotten in here and stayed awake. So,
no, we want to look at expanding to 90 minutes.
Okay. And also, and I need to talk about the different platform. I mentioned that a couple weeks ago. If we want to move off one and move to the other. And
if it's easier to post the stuff to iTunes and the other distribution channels.
Yeah, I started looking into that. And I need to pick that up again. So I just completed 2 projects recently. So, you know, the deck's got a little more room on it, or the plate has a little bit more room on it.
All right. So
we can look
at that. But if nothing else, Sted and I chatted, and perhaps next Monday, while we've got the international break and things are a little bit slower, we'll go to 90 minutes. That way we can get the rhythm down before it gets hot and heavy again.
Yeah, okay. Can I ask for an 8 o'clock start on that?
I think 8 o'clock's a little hard for Stead, but I will run that by
him. Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know.
He said the boy's bedtime is 8:30, so 8:30 is actually better for him.
Gives him a half hour with his son.
Mm-hmm.
Those are golden minutes. Golden time. Let's keep it at 8:30.
He can get him in the bed and then come down and do the show rather than trying. So 8:30 works out better for him.
Let's go for 8:30 and give Stead a 5-minute window on that thing in case he gets a little delayed.
I think the bedtime may be like 8. Whatever it is, 8:30 just works out better for him. So we talked about that.
Let's keep it at 8:30 then.
Yeah.
8:30 till 10.
8:30 until 10.
That'll work.
All right.
Moving the clocks forward was a good move because if we had to do that on the old time, I'd have been conked. So, well, the wake ups over here are too early, they've got to be done. So, I feel it on the back end of the day. Usually I start winding down about 8 o'clock. So, making it till 9:30 is no big feat, but. Making it till 10 would be a push, but we move the clocks forward, so I'm really only making it till 9, if you know what I mean.
Yep, that'll work. All right.
Good deal. All right, good.
All right, I'll talk to you later on in the week, okay?
Yeah, anytime, Mike. Thanks a lot. Great show. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Peace.
Paul out.
Paul, Mike out.